The Great Cricketer is a Twitter stream. It's about playing cricket at the grade level.
It's a tough, mean, dirty, dirty business being a great cricketer.
A lot of cricketers, you know, that's all they know. They've done it since they're 10 and they have a deep-seated fear of change.
But the great cricket is all about being the most alpha version of yourself as possible at all costs and at all times.
I don't bat or bowl. I just feel the gully, count the number of dot balls in a row, sledge 15-year-olds, make me feel better about myself.
Thanks, champ.
Oh, no, you called me champ.
And welcome to the Great Cricketer Podcast. On today's show, we're going to review one of the greatest summers of all time and what has been an absolute festival of cricket. From England's World Cup win to Australia's retaining of the urn and everything in between, we'll pick out our favourite moments, revealing nothing means anything. But undoubtedly, the story of the Northern Summer has been Pavel Florin, the Transylvanian bowler who stole our hearts via the European Cricket League. He joins the show from Romania to tell us about his hopes, his fears, his dreams, and why he'd probably get into your second grade side. That's all between, all before hashtag AskTGC, the final hashtag AskTGC of this English summer. My name is Ian Higgins, and I am joined by Dave Edwards in Sydney and Sam Perry in Melbourne. Boys, first question, I suppose, should be, are you ready for a little break from the cricket? Because it's been such a long summer, it's been an intense period of cricket. Are you guys ready for a little bit of a break?
Yeah, man, I think so. It's good to get some sleep back. He goes, and Dave, and welcome this evening to this final chat as I embody some kind of a current affair presenter. It's been good getting some sleep already. Went to bed at 9:18 p.m. last night.
Oh, what a treat.
And felt really good waking up at 6 a.m. Yeah. So if that's any indicator of how I feel, then yeah, I'm glad it's done. But it was great. It was a great summer. It was a great Northern summer. Mm-hmm. Not sure if, you know, we weren't talking about like heavyweight championship kind of cricket. It wasn't worldies on worldies at all times, but by God, it was dramatic and the stakes were high. So it was just, it was in your face. It was always there. It was always on. It was very 2019 in that way, wasn't it? The quality wasn't exceptionally high all the time, but it was just always there and we gluttonously feasted on it. Mm-hmm. And now I'm full, very, very full and sick. Over there, that's a separate issue.
Yeah. Well, that's what happens when you overindulge in anything. I guess moderation's the key. I mean, I'm looking forward to this little break, he goes, and I'm sure the cricketers are as well. I mean, they must have just been so happy to get on that plane after months in England, a foreign country, away from families. Well, some of their families came with them, which is, you know, an indulgence on the, not on the taxpayer. Well, I was about to say on the taxpayer. But, you know, just getting on that plane, you know, walking into first class, I'm sure they did, just hearing familiar Australian accents around them from the cabin crew, you know, maybe watch some movies from the, you know, Red Dog, The Dish, Australian classic section.
Is that what's on Qantas at the moment?
No, it just always is. Showman. Yeah, yeah.
The Great Showman. Jackman.
Yeah, yeah. Just putting those Qantas eye masks on, just getting a well-earned kip. Boys, you've deserved it. You've retained the ashes. And I can't remember, you know, what happened really over the last 3 months, because it's all a blur.
I
guess we'll go through it in this podcast, hopefully.
Try. Okay, so let's do it. Here's how we should frame this opening segment here. I want to go through a couple of everyone's sort of favourite moments from the World Cup and the Ashes. I don't think it's happened before where, like, such two big series, like the biggest series in Australia and in English cricket's, you know, calendar, four-year cycle, have collided together. But they have, and it's been amazing. I like just trying to think back to the World Cup. So let's go through individually. Two of your favourite moments. We'll just go one by one. So, Pez, why don't you start? What's one of your favourite memories of the last summer?
I have two. They're sort of both from the Ashes. We can chuck some. We'll talk about the World Cup as well.
Yeah.
Like one of them is an earnest cricket thing, and the other one is not so much. So I'll start
just
with the
first
one. Oh yeah, I'll give you the first one.
Get on.
I'm just framing. Framing.
Important frame.
Let me frame, and then I'll talk. Manus Labuschagne's call up from whatever fucking bench he was on, after the best since Bradman got knocked the fuck out by Jofra Archer at Lord's, and coming in from wherever he was in the nets, and getting like lidded hard in the middle of his forehead, and falling on the ground and bouncing up like a cartoon character. And saving the match for Australia in like I thought it was a triumph of technique and willpower. Like I thought that was the most underrated performance of the summer. There's so many great things to talk about, but he saved the match for Australia when Archer was just blazing a trail through the nation's hearts and souls. And I was quite inspired by that. And then I'm kind of doubling down because, you know, there is a former test player who's a great friend of the show who criticised me deeply personally for suggesting on Twitter that it was as good an innings as I thought that it was. So I'm just doing that purely out of ego.
Don't you reckon, like, I mean, it was unbelievable what he did, but, like, just the fact that he even did it with all the jokes that we were making about Labuschagne, not just us, people in general, you know. I mean, he plundered runs over there in England, but it wasn't maybe the highest standard of cricket, was it, you know, that he was blazing all those centuries in county cricket, Division 2.
He was like the personification of earthing, you know, of the new way of Australian cricket that everybody laughed at, and we will continue to laugh at as well, with the eagle on the back of his bat and his Isaiah quote and all of that kind of malarkey. But really, deep down, all we've been crying out for is a number three, and we found one in Labuschagne, who, as you said, we mocked mercilessly. He's had the last laugh. He does seem to laugh a lot as well, and that was my cricketing moment. I'll just kick off with the earnest one.
I was going to say, with Labuschagne, like, has there ever been like such a successful selection where there's a bit about him, and, like, you know, like the Marsh jokes stem from having, you know, being selected because he's got a bit about him and people like him, and, like, but it's never really worked out in Australian cricket history that I can think of in recent times. Anyway, I'm talking like the last sort of maybe decade and a half. Selections based on if there's a bit about him don't really work out. This is worked out because you look at Labuschagne's numbers; they don't add up, don't stack up. Okay, he did really well in Div 2 county cricket coming into this Ashes series, got himself into the squad. Still, like, picked because apparently Ponting really likes him. So there's a bit about him, very popular, trains hard. You know, all those like intangible characteristics, but it's just worked out really well, and now I think we can look for more guys who've just got a bit about him.
Yeah, he goes, and, you know, that's not a data point that, you know, the likes of CricViz can establish. I mean, there is no metric for having a bit about you, and I like that. No, it's a gut feel selection, and, you know, historically there's been probably too many gut feel selections, and, you know, perhaps to our detriment, but, you know, it is good to see one every now and then that comes off, and that was a great one, really was, and he's our number three now.
The thing that I like about Marnus, though, and that whole concept of having a bit about him is, like, it's a different style of having a bit about him at the moment. See, in the past, like, the things you had about you were the chest and the pipes and the deep voice and the beers and the chops and the chop stories and the nudity and, you know, there actually are data points around this, and we'll release our annual report in 2020, but that's something we've not announced yet. It's a different stats company we're starting. But what I like about Marnus and what makes me feel safe is that what he has about him is a childlike, pure, nerdish love for cricket. And while we can mock that very, very deeply because it shows all sorts of other gaps in his social life and whatnot, really, when he came out to bat against Jofra Archer, I have to confess, like, at 2 a.m., I thought, you know, he's got God on his side, and I'll take anything at the moment. And he loves the game. He loves cricket. He eats cricket balls. He just bats, and he's just like, we need that. We need more people who just love cricket. They're not athletes first. They're cricketers first. That's why I love Marnus.
Interesting. It's kind of like how religious people, like non-religious people, see God in their final moments. Apparently, that's always the claim.
I like how he puts Bible verse on his bat to show that he's sponsored by God.
Well, there goes our sponsorship with the Westboro Baptist Church. Pez, what's your second highlight of the summer?
Okay, well, the second one, I thought we'd go around in circles, but okay.
We might as well just roll off.
Okay, well, the second one was, and it's probably a little bit indulgent, but it's a story from us being in the UK, and we turned up to London. We were extremely jet-lagged. We obviously all went out that night because we're not stupid. Wise people, and we're stupid, yes. Mm. And then we went to Edgbaston the next day, so we're fractionally hungover. We shamelessly requested to be on the BBC, and we're given the green light. on radio, which probably shouldn't have happened, but we had a really fun time. Just after our spot on the BBC, we were all extremely nervous, etc. We stood in the corridors and all sorts of people are walking past and stuff like that. And Jim Maxwell, I'm sure, is listening to the show at the moment. Kindly, he stopped us. And I just want to say to the listeners, quite often people stop us, and I don't want to do the like fourth wall indulgent thing too much, but just once. No. Quite often people stop us and will give us their grade cricket and club cricket experiences, and sometimes if they were better cricketers than us, they'll sort of do it in a way where it's like, you know, boys, I know more than you, etc. And you say, yeah, okay, well done, that's fine, thanks. But Jim Maxwell, he stopped us and told us two or three of the most heinous club cricket stories I've ever heard, deadpan.
He didn't laugh once, didn't even smile. He kept
the strictest of eye contact with Higos throughout the entirety of these anecdotes as well.
You know how people fixate on one person when they're talking sometimes?
Because he was right next to you, Higos. He was just eyeballing you to his left.
But you just need to understand, like, just to take it into the room, like, he just finished a commentary stint where he was sat, we got to see it, like, he sat right next to Jeffrey Boycott and their knees and feet were touching.
They were so close to each other.
As they were talking. And we were just like, oh, this is how the sausage gets made. And he came out and, you know, everyone knows his voice, so it's just quite surreal to hear the voice of your childhood tell you three of the most disgraceful club cricket stories about old players. And then just to cap it all off, someone came around with some ice creams and he said, "Want one?" And then grabbed five and walked off.
Did he even blink? Did he even blink the whole time?
I don't even know if he knew we were there. But no, love Jim. Love Jim, obviously. But that was one of my moments.
It was like a scene out of Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Yeah. And I'm extremely conscious of you know, sort of going beyond that fourth wall there, but I just thought that had to be said.
That was good. Tough to beat. Well, hard to dissect that as well. All right, Edos, we'll move on to you. Give me one of your first moments.
This isn't a favourite moment, but I thought it was a telling moment. So,
sure.
Obviously, Dave Warner had a fucking terrible Ashes series, but he went okay in the World Cup, but he scored really slow, if you'll remember.
Yeah, I do remember that.
Now that I think back, I really think this was a warning sign. Because, right. You know, I mean, we never could have predicted the way that he would. Yeah, the cry for help that was. But you know, he did failed so badly in the Ashes, but he hit runs in the World Cup. And I just think if we thought deeply about Davey, we would have seen that as a warning sign. It's kind of like when you're predicting a recession, you know, there may still be some economic growth, but recessions typically start when the economy is at its peak overall. Yeah. And that's why you need to dig deeper and look at other economic indicators like wage increases and underemployment figures. And if we were honest, we could have looked at Warner's performance in the World Cup in a similar way as a possible indicator of decline, because he wasn't batting the way Davey Warner normally bats, was he? The runs weren't flowing.
You sort of saw it as like economic headwinds. His batting and his strike rate were a sort of predictor of economic or run-scoring headwinds to come.
There were housing headwinds, small business optimism, all that kind of stuff. You know,
are you saying that it was like the global financial crisis where the banks in America were just kept you know, handing out loans and everyone thinking, here are the good times. The good times are here to stay.
Yeah.
And then the bubble burst.
Well, that's what I thought. I thought the good times were here and Davey Warner was here. And this was just a precursor to his dominance in the Ashes. But, you know, we were worried a little bit about his strike rate. But if we go back to the World Cup and we see how Australia batted, I mean, we kind of broadly just accepted that, you know, we'd adopted this 90s era approach to the World Cup, and that we would try and bat the 50 overs and post somewhere between 230 and 270 and then grimly defend that total. And just no one saw Davey Warner's decline maybe as a warning sign for the Ashes.
So you're saying that maybe he was out of form during the World Cup as well? And we couldn't really tell? Because he scored that 100 against Pakistan, didn't he?
I know he did score the second most amount of runs in the World Cup, I think. But they just weren't the right kind of runs, he goes.
Not the right kind of runs.
Or a strange kind of runs for David Warner's style. I mean, for Mark Taylor, maybe that would have been good. Sort of 15 or 20 odd years ago.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the things with underemployment, though, it's quite interesting. It doesn't put high pressure on wages, obviously. No. But wages have actually remained stable, if not increased a little bit, next to the cost of living over the last 20 years.
That's a good point.
And also, a lot of the part-time and casual employment in Australia, and I hate to say this, like, because I'm kind of against the gig economy, but a lot of it is through choice. And many people are happier in part-time or casual arrangements. And it does help both, you know, men and women make choices in the workforce that they want to make.
Underemployment is out of control, Pez. I mean, there was some data that came out today which indicates that that I could point to.
It's not out of control. It's at 8%.
Well, what's interesting, though, is this generation that we're living in right now are the most, you know, materialistically endowed of any generation previous, and that's kind of like Coulterniles runs. Mm. I'm not sure in what capacity. I just feel like saying that.
I was really hoping that was a segue into your favourite moment.
No, I'm not professional like that. Well, yeah. I will use my first moment here as a mine's also like a precursor to what was to come. And if you guys can cast your minds back to that first game of the World Cup, it was England were playing against South Africa, and Ben Stokes took, in my opinion, probably the greatest catch of all time, goalkeeper style, backhanded, fielding sort of not on the rope. He was kind of like 15, 20 metres in from the rope and just took an absolute screamer. And let's be honest, we have been living in the summer of Stokes. Mm. You know, there's Botham 81, Flintoff 05, Stokes 19. That's just the way it is. I mean, you think of like all the great things Stokes would then go on to do, and that catch is just now forgotten. But in my opinion, it is actually the most difficult catch I've ever seen executed. Like the stuff that like gets you the highlights are the ones where like you catch it, then you go, if you throw it up in the air, then your teammate catches it, you know, or you catch it yourself, that kind of thing. Sheldon Cottrell took a great catch against Australia, kind of run around the boundary, plucked it one-handed. The skill involved with Stokes' catch in that ODI game was like, it is fucking amazing, and it was probably like the fifth best thing he did the entire summer. So that was kind of my one, but it was all a precursor of what was to come, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, we didn't know it at the time, did we? But fuck me, it was a good catch.
you're right, Higos, and I think like there's so many sliding doors moments in cricket over time. You know, Stokes, because of his indiscretions a few years ago, missed out on the Ashes down here. And he was in an absolutely rich vein of form then as well, and it would have been very interesting to see if he could have done anything. Obviously, Australia won really convincingly, but there was a sense that he did have something to prove, and he just showed himself to be a huge class above this summer. And, like, it's interesting, like, the Botham 81 – I mean, comparisons are usually pretty rubbish anyway, generally speaking, but, like, yeah, had England managed to – win the Ashes here, you know, you're talking about a rise, you know. So Ben Stokes, I reckon, because he's basically got them over the line in the World Cup final, you know, which I know a lot of Kiwi fans will not like us talking about in any way. But, I mean, he just showed what a fantastic player he is, and we just wish we had him.
He goes, I'll do another possibly a precursor moment for mine. Mm. And this is also for our Indian fans. So this is early on in the World Cup. Steve Smith obviously still finding his way. You'll remember that game against India that we lost. It was a round game, and Smith got sent down to fine leg, and the crowd, i.e. the Indian supporters, just started booing him. Mm. And Kohli, obviously the captain of India, just walked over, just fucking emperor-like, and just motioned for them all to calm down, and they did. And, you know, he pointed to the logo on his chest and said, you know, you're cheering for India. You're not here to boo Smith. And then, and then I think he shook Smith's hands to complete the gesture. And it was just this fucking big dick energy alpha. Like, we talk a lot about alphadom on this podcast, mainly with tongues in cheek and mainly completely spuriously. But this was really interesting just to see the absolute power that one person has. Like, he'd literally just changed their behaviour with a, you know, just a small yet powerful action.
Yeah,
and it was fucking nice to see. Like, it was a different side to Kohli. I mean, he's a fierce competitor, and you know, we've seen his funny side. You know, funny moisturizer ads, and you know, his social media game, and so on. But on the field, he's always just been this ruthless character. But I just thought it was an interesting moment, and obviously, you know, this was early Smith still trying to find his way in the World Cup, and you know, just had one of his compatriots come over and publicly back him. And I thought that was an interesting moment. And if you contrast that with how the English talked about him, where they basically said, "Fill your boots, fans, boo as much as you want." You know,
that I also found why you come out to watch cricket anyway.
Yeah. Oh, mate, that's such a good point. That I actually forgot about that. Didn't that confuse us as Australians to like how are we supposed to feel about this? Because Kohli, like, you know, one of the most hated competitors. You know, I vouch that if he was Australian, he'd be probably prime minister for a period of time. We just love him, but like. like we really do hate Kohli because, as you say, rightfully Edo's, he's so ruthless on the field. But then, like, you know, when the man, you know, pats the BCCI crest, you know, yeah, the people stop and listen. And it's just like, but how are we supposed to feel about that? So we're like, yeah, Kohli was right to do that. Still hate him. Yeah. But yeah, he was right to do that.
And well, then, we don't hate him.
I think we like him.
Yeah, it's a love hate, isn't it? It's like we hate you out of respect. Like you've been so good that you've now emoted from us. You've made us feel something, so we'll always respect that.
Yeah,
we all need to go to therapy.
Yeah, I guess I was kind of basing my opinion on reading social media, which is obviously the completely intelligent thing to do always. But yeah, it's a really interesting comparison, isn't it, to, you know, say Steve Harmison, who isn't in the same sphere as Virat Kohli, but Harmison really, really getting it right on there, saying, nah, he'll always be a cheat. He'll always be a cheat.
Please give me a contract, TalkSport.
Well, speaking of feeling stuff, like, because my second one. Is Nathan Lyon's dropped run out at Headingley. It was the moment of the summer. And I hate to bring that up again. Well, I say I hate to, but I deliberately have. And it's just because it made me feel something that I just haven't in decades of watching international cricket. And, like, to put it into contrast, the next test match, Australia retaining the Ashes, at LBW, three reds for the Hazelwood LB on Overton. Mm. And I was watching it, it was about maybe 2-3 in the morning, something like that. And I just gave it a fist pump. Yeah. And I was on the couch by myself, just a fist pump, just like, yes, like my team has won.
Yep.
But like the reaction that I yielded from watching Lyon drop the catch, followed next ball by the most plum LBW in the history of cricket.
Yeah.
I just haven't had that visceral reaction.
But what did you do? Like, what did you emit of a noise, or did you like just feel like the goosebumps meme when someone's whispering in the ear, or like what was your physical reaction?
Good reference. I told this story at the time, but I had a date over, and
presumed that whenever you talk about watching cricket. At this point,
well, I can't watch it alone, you know. Yeah. I get scared, especially watching Joffre Archer bowl. Ha ha ha. I screamed fuck during the run out,
the intercourse.
During the intercourse. And then the next ball, I did the same thing as Pez. I was like, I was less than 30 centimetres away from the TV screaming, that's out, that's fucking out.
Yeah.
And I just compare that to when we won. We won the next test match. It's just nothing. So, like, the feeling of that missed run out is just, that's, I'm taking that forward for a long time, and I'll hold that close to my heart probably until I die alone.
Yeah. I remember, like, I don't think I said anything. I was so gobsmacked. It all happened so incredibly quickly. And I'm surprised there hasn't yet been like a JFK-esque kind of
there was a
movie about it, you know, the ball hitting the ground back and to the left. Like, does it skid? Does it jump?
It was a magic ball theory.
Did it actually land closer to him than we appreciate? But that's something that we can look at down the track, maybe in our annual report. But I think my heart just, I think I just froze and my heart just sank. You know, when you get really bad news or you get frightened, or you get, you know, caught doing something you shouldn't be doing.
Headmaster's office, you get
in trouble, headmaster shit. Yeah, that's what I was talking about. And your heart sinks. I think that's what I had, and my jaw dropped the way, like the Scream mask does, you know, 20-year reference. I just looked like about, I had the Scream mask on for about 5 seconds.
Yeah, face turned green. Yeah.
I just like being, I like feeling like that. And cricket's not really a game. Like, it's one like of the reasons why football / soccer is such a popular sport, because it's very low scoring and emits these emotions that are like pent up. And like cricket is drawn out of a 5 days in this epic series, and there's one moment, split second like that, like a goal going in or a penalty or whatever. Like, and that was the equivalent. And just the release, it was just so nice to feel something.
Well, test matches, close test match finishes, it is the most fucking slow release.
Tantric
outcome in all of sports. You're right. It's 5 days. It's heightened emotion. It's all building towards this one moment, and fuck, it makes you feel, doesn't it? And we don't like feeling these
Ruined
days.
Orgasm. Dave, do you have a second one?
I think I've already done two. I mean, I've got more. What else did I feel?
Highly recommended ones. What about Ponting and Steve Waugh on the balcony, generally, yeah, sure, and just the symbolic importance of that. Don't have to go into it too much. We've talked about it a lot, but, you know, forearms, hairy forearms, yeah. Steve Waugh's squint, and just, again, feeling things, you know, late at night and just going, what, you know, why does this make, this makes me feel more comfortable and safe than it probably should. Well, you know, I've been taught, I've been told meditation's good, I've been told exercise is good, but I feel calmer just through the vision of those guys in tracksuits watching cricket.
Well, it just made us feel like the time when the world was simpler, Pez. It's a complex, fast-moving 24/7 world now, and it brought us back to the late 90s, political stability, strong economic growth, sporting success, all that kind of stuff. And, you know, these days we have none of that. And I don't really care what wisdoms he imparted to the team, and I frankly don't care. You're right. It was all about just making us feel safe. Like it's kind of like a national emergency. Like you know, like the movie The King's Speech, when the King's has to deliver a radio broadcast, you know, announcing the war on Germany. It's a bit like that. Like, well, the people just needed to see this or hear this, and maybe Australia, maybe that metaphor works for the English summer. Australia had a stutter, and Steve Waugh is Jeffrey Rush's speech pathologist character who came in and cured it.
I think that's
to me the Ponting and Waugh stuff just kind of reminds me like how we put all the eggs into the Ashes 19 basket, and you know, it's the thing of like World Cup semi-final, retain the Ashes. You look at that on paper and you go, yeah, before the series I would have taken that, but like I'm going to look at this in like 6 months' time and go like, or actually it'll come around like next time when we go to England, I'll be like, fuck, we should have won. We should have won the Ashes, because next time we go in 4 years, it's going to be like, they still haven't won here in 22 years and all that stuff. And it's like, look at the state of what was happening with England. Like Anderson bowled four overs in the entire series. Steve Smith has had the greatest series in the history of fucking cricket. You know, Joe Root had to bat three, didn't want to bat three.
Yeah.
England's 4, 5, 6, 7 average, like less than 35. And we still couldn't do it. Like, it's just so hard to win there. We get to the Oval, fifth test, win the toss. You beauty. We're going to have a bowl. Fuck.
Do you really feel like we didn't do it? Like, I felt like they did it. Like, they did what they came to do. Like, everyone knew the terms of engagement. They knew what returning with the urn was. I just personally don't feel like there's... there was something missing from that. There'll be wind-up people when we go back saying, you know, oh, you still haven't won here or whatever. But, like they won.
No, we had to go and win it. And, yeah, it was like a Pyrrhic victory, wasn't it? Like, there was a lot of fucking bloodshed, high body count. But, you know, we went there and we've been declared winners. And what I think, and this is a tangent, we should just fucking get to take home the Ashes urn. I'm sick of this shit, how it has to be, like, held in England. I actually saw today that I think the urn is coming back to Australia from December to February, but it's going to be exhibited at the State Library in Victoria. So obviously any history lovers out there should get over and check it out. But why can't we fucking be trusted? Why don't we get to keep the urn on our – I want it. I want to see it.
Because it was a gift.
Yeah.
I know you think they might go, well, obviously we both, it's both of ours now, but no, that doesn't happen.
The Ashes is a child of divorce, and England won the custody battle, and Australia is just a beleaguered dad who like gets shitty visitation rights.
But
latest inquiry under Hanson and Andrews. Dave.
No, it's like strict supervision by government agencies when we get to visit it. Like, I want 3 days. Give me 3 days. Give me Tuesday to Thursday, love. I'm good for it.
Any others from you, Higos? Any highly recommended feelings or thoughts from there?
I'm sorry. I kind of went through like my the main ones I wanted to speak about. Do you have anything else, Piers?
Oh, I just wanted a quick shout out for and this will only mean something to those who came to our second London show. But the question from Graham Thorpe's son. Who just stood up and made a number of comments. Were they public about Mr. Thorpe? It'd be interesting. But those who went to the show will know what that means.
Well, I'll give a shout out to the guy who asked the question directly after that, who opened the question with, like, I'm Shane Warne's son. And it was probably the laugh of the entire tour, which is always good when your fans are funnier than you are.
Yeah, that's right.
So that's good. We've got a couple minutes here. Looking forward, England go to New Zealand. Australia also play New Zealand, but Pakistan before that. They're also going to India for an ODI and T20 series in fucking January, because that's the middle of our summer, so we should go to India. That's just, you know, that's just big dick energy all over again. I mean, there's a lot happened. I kind of think, like, no one's had a better Ashes than Joe Burns. You know, I feel like no one did more to their career than Joe Burns. Opening the batting, right-hander, not really sure why he didn't at least stick around for the squad. Bancroft did, Marcus Harris did. I don't know, it's a weird one. But is there anything we can look forward to in the immediate future for Australian cricket, for English cricket, for anything?
I just think there's a good, like, I don't think Australia's batting is that bad. I just think that things are so different on different conditions, and a bunch of them are probably going to come into the Australian summer. They won't be facing a consistently potent deliveries that you get in the UK, even though, you know, both New Zealand and Pakistan have some good bowlers.
Colin de Gondo.
Of course. And, you know, we should talk about Colin, but we won't, because we're myopic Australians. And, yeah, I think a lot of those guys will probably do quite well. I think the batting lineup is probably a little bit more solid than people think now. It's just that, like, it's really fucking hard to bat in England, as evidenced by the returns of both sides.
Edos, what are you looking forward to in the summer?
I'm looking forward to this little break. I mean, obviously, I'm suffering from emotional exhaustion from retaining the Ashes, so I'm looking forward to a little bit of a break. New Zealand and Pakistan, looking forward to welcoming them to our shores. The Big Bash as well, I guess that's a thing. Do I care? Not sure. I guess I'll find that out over the next few months.
Keep talking about what you're looking forward to.
I'm looking forward to getting some of the New Zealand talent onto the show that we asked for a couple of years ago, but I don't think we were I remember trying to get Jimmy Neesham. Neesham.
I'll tell you what, mate, I'm looking forward to, like, Fox will have back the cricket. I mean, I know we have a relationship with other networks, but fuck me, those KO minis, they got me through the World Cup. As a full-time worker and a, you know, time-poor parent, these automated highlight packages, boy, they do a job.
Why would you say
that? Another network is Seven.
and then say other networks, which we're actually contracted
to. It's like not talking about the opposition leader.
I won't mention him by name.
The member for Grainler.
We've got Romania's finest on the phone in a couple of minutes' time. After that, hashtag AskTJC.
Look, to be honest, I don't try and take the piss too much, but the problem is you start to get a little bit bored. So I try and do the right thing by the competition, I must admit. Wow. When I go there, I try and play conventionally, but realistically, I'm thinking from ball one, I just want to park this fucking thing into the car park. But you don't want to come out of it and people say, look at that arsehole Hodgie, you know, so... Yeah, what a prick. But, yeah, I mean, it's good fun.
Here goes, Dave. It's a privilege to have this man on the show. There's no need for the stats red carpet. In many ways, this man has ascended to the throne of king of club cricket. He's a player and club president at Cluj in Transylvania, Romania. Just as I say that, I just think back to this account starting on Twitter in corporate bathrooms, and I never thought that we'd be talking to a Transylvanian cricketer, but what a great code this is. He joins us on the phone on the way to Bucharest right now, I think. Pavel Florin, a very warm welcome to the Grade Cricketer podcast, mate.
Hi, everybody, and I'm glad to be in your show.
We're glad to have you with us. Pavel, we always start the same way, and we're not going to change with you. What does club cricket mean to you?
If you try now hire me, is a problem, because you need to speak with my president now.
What a start. What a start.
Are you saying, so have you got a lot of people?
This is politics, no?
This is politics.
This is a political podcast.
Now we go with the professional people.
But Pavel, can you, just for the audience, many people will have obviously seen you on TV now, but can you just tell us a little bit? I know you have done it all the time now because everyone's so interested in you and your story, but what is your cricket story? What led you to the Euro Cricket Leagues? What made you even like cricket? That's an interesting one.
Yes, is two men here. Is the Pavel the player and the Pavel the president, and also another part of Pavel life. But I speak about the Pavel the player.
Please,
you know my secret because why I love this game and. Why I enjoy to play and everything is because, you know, in cricket I am a child. I play just for a few years and everything is new for me. And I have dreams now. It's like a child. You see new moves, you see new players, you see new stadiums, you see everything is new for me, and I just dream.
So, Pavel, you've got a game today. You're actually on your way to Bucharest. This is a semi-final that you're playing today, is that right?
Yes. Just now I'm packing and... You know the story. I need go 500 kilometers.
500 kilometers.
But for us is not a problem. How I say earlier, we dream and we dream again to reach to ECL. We need win the championship and it's not a problem for us to travel or spend money.
Do you guys all travel in the same car, or does everyone drive in their own car? Are you giving anybody a lift out to Bucharest today?
My people is not from. I have here in Cluj 7 people, but the rest of the people is in all over of Romania. The other teams is in Bucharest. Everybody's player there and we represent the rest of Romania and I go with the car and pick up all the boys on the road.
Pavel, do they pay you for petrol?
What?
Do they pay you for petrol, for fuel, for gas?
Yes. Everybody pay the petrol.
Good.
We are here it's not important if you are president or player. The money is the same.
Oh, just something.
So you're the club president. Does that? Are you also the club treasurer? Are you involved in the collection of subs payments for the season?
The problem in Romania, nobody sponsorship the cricket. Here, the people think for real the cricket is that sport with the horses, polo. So who sponsors this?
I was going to say, when you were playing in the European Cricket League, you were playing in a non-professional team and you were playing against teams from Italy and the Netherlands, and those guys had professional players that you were playing against. I mean, so what do some of your teammates do for work?
Yes, you see, if you are here and play in the park, play on the road, or when you go to the field, you play alone in that field, is not spectators or something. Mm-hmm. And when you reach there to the ECL and everything is paid and... your shirt, your pants is there, and the television is there, the player, the mass media, everything is there, is huge for everybody. You are in TV also. It's fantastic. It was our dream, and we reached there.
Oh, and you'll have achieved more doing that than many people listening to this show as well, Pavel. One thing I wanted to ask you in terms of trying to understand the similarities between cricket in Romania and cricket in, say, Australia is do you guys shower at the end of the day's play? And do you get a lot of respect for your very strong body? Because a lot of people listening to the show will look at your body, because you're a bouncer, and just say, you know what, he can play cricket however he likes, but what a rig, you know, what a fantastic chest and biceps you have.
Of course, I am a sport lover, and if you don't know... One of my favorite sports is Aussie rules.
Wow.
And I watched maybe, I don't know, 500 matches of Aussie rules. And if I born in Australia, I play also this game. But it's not late. And I'm the president of club, of course, and maybe I make a section for Aussie rules and one for netball.
Okay.
Because
you should do that.
Nobody play here Aussie rules and netball in Europe.
You could probably have a word to the AFL CEO. They're a very expansionist-driven private league. Pavel, you've been over in London recently. I saw some pictures of you at Lord's wearing a very sharp blazer. What was it like for you visiting the home of cricket in Lord's?
It not was that idea to visit Lord's. It was go and see how the little clubs manage everything there. And I visit many little clubs. For me, Lord's was very expensive. For real, because I need buy clothes. You can go in the
Lord's gift shop.
And of course, it was a great experience, and is one of the best day of my life.
Mm-hmm. Pavel, what are you? What are you?
Guys, let me speak about my bowling. Speak about. I don't know. Just tell you how is the life here with the bat
Please.
Of cricket.
Talk about your cricket.
Talk about it. About Let's bowling. Go.
Yeah.
Yes. You see, when you go on the street with the bat, you have problems here.
Why?
Because, the police arrest you here if you go to the bat in the... And I have a bad experience with the police when opened my trunk, and there was the bat of cricket. And I try explain, guys, I am a player of cricket, and these guys say, "What is the cricket? I don't know." And I say, "Okay, it's a sport. I'm a sport, and don't believe me, the police." And I say, "Okay, but think." How I can't go to the fight with this bat? It's very heavy, and for real, you can't go to the fight with the cricket bat. It's not efficiency.
Is this 211? That was 211.
But the police don't believe me, and after I show some pictures with me and I play.
Wow. I mean, Pavel, on that note, you obviously have a huge commitment to cricket. You know, you're driving 500 kilometres to the game. You say that you bowl with your heart. You know, you're evading police and explaining to them why a cricket bat isn't a weapon, and you're a sports lover. There's a lot of people who listen to this show who play a lot of cricket but actually hate it. What do you have to say to the people who perhaps have some hard times in cricket and aren't sure why they play?
I don't understand very well the questions. But,
no, fair enough.
I talk about another thing. I say you, I'm the child of cricket, and what I don't understand, why people, and the professional or ordinary man, at age 35 or 40, leave the cricket. This I don't understand. Is a wonderful sport to play. It's not matter if is money or not money involved. Why the people don't play cricket anymore? I meet many people at Lords, at Oval, or at home who stay and just watch and don't play. Why is this? I don't understand. Please answer to my question.
Yeah.
Well, in Australia, if you're over 25 years of age, you're considered old by selectors both at grade level and national level. So it's very difficult to maintain enthusiasm for the game when there's literally no path for you to excel. So and people then they have to think about things like family and career and all these other considerations come into it, Pavel, and that's why people end up giving the game away. Because as you know, it can be very difficult to spend so much time and effort driving around the country. In your case, 500 kilometres, that would be very difficult for people here in Australia to do. And to your credit, you do it. But that's why the game's so difficult to play when you get older, Pavel.
I think it's wrong because it's one of the beauty of life, no? The sport, the cricket, no?
I agree. And Pavel, another thing in Australia, and maybe you have a thought on this, is when we grow up, we're pressured to be very good at the game, maybe. So when you don't score that many runs or you get hit for a lot of runs as a bowler, if you're not successful, you sort of feel like you've failed. And so there's this constant sense of failure in cricket, and people just end up leaving the game because it's a tough game. But maybe you have some thoughts on that as well. I mean, how do you deal with a hard day in the field in cricket?
Yes, I have the same problem. I have the job. Maybe I need to. I'm not married to go and make a family. And also, I have the problem with my teammates or everybody. When you're new in this sport, don't let you bowl and bat. Mm-hmm. But I don't give up. Now the people laugh. This my bowling is like a grenade and another thing. But I have dreams. Mm-hmm. And I have big dreams, like a player. Of course, my dreams like a president is reachable. But I have dreams like a player also. I am 40 years old, but the cricket is not finished here. Who knows? Who knows? I play in ECL. No, it was my dream to play in ECL. I play. Who knows? Maybe one day I play in BBL. Why not?
Pavel, people are often very scared of playing cricket. There's a lot of fears, maybe an extra fast bowler or a catch coming your way or, you know, your dad coming to watch. I mean, what are some of the things that scare you when you're playing cricket, if anything? Maybe you're not scared of anything playing cricket.
Cricket is very easy to play. Is another sport who is hard sport. If he's coming a fast bowler, be wrong or be bad? Hit you a ball, no? Hit you in the chest, nothing is problem. Or hit you in the head, you have a helmet. In my opinion, it is not a dangerous sport. But this sport have adrenaline, very big adrenaline. This is important because when you stay and wait to come the ball, think how your heart beat in that moment.
Oh, yeah.
No? When you're bowling and you see, in my case, you see the ball is going slow, and reach to the bat, man. And when I stay there and I wait to see what the batsman do. My heart is boom, 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 boom. And I see the batsman hit the ball, and the ball is going up, up, up. And I pray, please catch it, please catch it, please catch it.
Can you explain that's how it feels when someone drops a catch off your bowling?
It's not a problem. This never was a problem because also I dropped the catches and it's part of the game. This is the problem. The professional player don't drop the catches. And the matches is not fun. Sometimes you need drop the catches. It's part of the game, no?
Pavel, in Australia, each team records their scores and then it's logged into a competition management system known as My Cricket. So everyone's runs and wickets are available for everybody publicly to view online. Is that the same in Romania? Are your statistics on the internet? And if so, what's the URL?
Please repeat the question because I don't understand very well.
Your batting statistics, your career, is that available on the internet or is it just in the scorebooks written down in pencil in Romania somewhere?
Yes, if you don't know, I am an international player. Of course, in my country,
I had no idea.
It's four native Romanian who play for national team. For native, and maybe we are 10 native Romanian who play cricket, adult men. Yeah. And of course, I'm in national team because I'm Romanian. No? Mm. And I have a number, and it's a good number. I am a number 688 in the world.
Nice.
This is my number.
Yes, that's your number.
That's higher than ours. Fine. Just last question, Pavel. You talked.
What I don't finish. I have the statistics, and my statistics is like that. Lucky man. Mm-hmm. All 10 balls, I make 10 runs, and I have 3 wickets.
Yeah.
That's a good statistic, I think.
That's good.
That's very good.
For national team, and I play against Austria, who is number 49 in the world. It's a good team.
Well, we hope to see you knock Austria over when you play them, Pavel. Thank you so much for joining us. And just to finish off, maybe do you have one last thing to say to our audience, who many of whom are cricketers, about playing the game?
Yes, if you don't know, I plan to come in Australia.
Mm.
So before I speak about Austria, I plan against Austria, not Australia. Austria is a country in Europe. I plan to come in Australia in November.
Oh, great.
It was... A small, I don't know if small or big, but is a club in Melbourne who say, Pavel, please come and see us. And he say to me, we don't have money to give you or something, but we make a collect and buy you a ticket to come here.
Oh, that's cool.
And this is... it's very huge for me because somebody makes something for me to make a collect and pay my ticket. I think that people want to be there, and I think is very important. I go to play some matches there, and it's very important for me, these matches, because these people make... this thing from the heart. Understand? You make things of the heart, I need respect. And I stay and prepare for this.
Pavel, you're a great bloke. You're a ripping bloke. Keep going.
What I can say for the people of the world, don't forget... this is a sport. It's not a business. Please don't forget this. It's a sport. We need to play with the heart, this sport, and believe in this sport.
Pava, well said. Gorgeous. Thanks for joining the great Beautiful cricketer. Stuff.
Thank you, guys. Thank you.
Lots of laughs as well.
I love the Twitter account. It's great. I follow it a great deal, and even while I understand not even half of it, I still love it.
What perfect endorsement could you have?
If you're listening to this in Australia and you plan on staying in Australia over the next few months and braving some of the deep climate issues that will confront us and will continue to confront us for a long period of time, if you can get past all the fires and stuff like that and the record temperatures, you will be getting yourself ready for summer. I just want to, you know, there's two things I think of when I think of summer. I think of climate change catastrophe, and I also think of budgie smuggler and getting my rig in shape.
And they're not mutually exclusive. You can wear budgies indoors, indoor pools. There is a proliferation of indoor pools around Sydney that I've seen recently. You can rock them there. That's a very good place to kit out in some budgies.
There are saunas have to be out in certain the sun. Nightclubs that you can, like spas in certain nightclubs you can go to, indoors, obviously, and just not the kind of clubs that I would go to necessarily, but what I'm saying is like...
Maybe some Japanese hot springs, the World Cup's on, if you're travelling that way.
That's a good point, Tokyo, yep, good point. I mean, summer is around the corner, though, for those playing the Australian game. You know,
well, it comes earlier and earlier due to climate change. Hey, Karen.
This is the golden age of global warming, Sam, as you know. And, you know, England are touring New Zealand, so the Barmy Army are going to be heading south for the winter. So what an opportunity to get the budgies out here. I mean, budgie smuggler just in and around Test cricket at the moment, the one-day scene, the Test scene, you know, T20 World Cup next year. They're probably going to be the name sponsor, naming rights. So if I had to guess, if I sponsor this podcast, they're probably going to be doing that as well.
We've had some feedback actually on the amount of times that we mention climate change, and it's been negative feedback. I'm not sure if you've seen any of the reviews on that on iTunes. We've been described as leftists, just paint by numbers.
The climate deniers. Yeah. Climate change, man-made climate change deniers. I mean, there's more consensus among the scientist community about man-made influence on climate change than there is about, smoking causing lung cancer.
See, listen to this bloke. I'm just on iTunes. He says, be prepared for regularly injected, holier-than-thou, unconsidered, paint-by-numbers, middle-class, green leftism.
It's
which
true.
Is, and then he goes on to say, which, of course, is the modern-day Australian equivalent to the faded macho culture they one-notely decry.
That's interesting.
Love when Dad gets on there.
That's a really good review. Keep the reviews coming.
Love when Dad gets on there. I had a breakfast with my parents about maybe 2 months ago. And it doesn't matter when it was. And it was when we just came back from the UK. It's about a month ago. And perfect winter's day. It was actually like 25 degrees. And I was saying this is just global warming in a nutshell, isn't it? And my parents were going on about how global warming isn't real and it's always been hot and stuff. And it has always been hot, but not as hot as it is right now. It's never been this hot. It's never been 25 degrees in the middle of winter, Mum.
Yeah.
Budgie smuggler.
So yeah, I mean, it's great news for budgie smuggler in a short term fashion. Though I'm sure that the good people there also acknowledge man-made climate change and it helps.
You can
their
actually
business.
Contribute with carbon offsets to your budgie purchases. I believe there's a little icon at the bottom.
Well, they're working
page.
On it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So with that in mind, and I think it's fair to say that over the course of the northern summer, we've absolutely nailed these ads. Budgiesmuggler.com.au.
Stop using plastic straws. Lads, as we've said a couple of times throughout this show, we're going to take a couple of weeks off in between seasons here whilst we refresh and work on our projects for the summer, of which there are many and they will be plentiful. And we, as ever, want you lovely people listening to this to come along for the ride. Many of you are overseas. So there's no excuse. You will fly to any of the cities where we'll be performing. And, that's a great advert for us. So live shows. People have been asking about the live shows. We are touring Australia again. We're going to be in Brisbane at the Princess Theatre on the 21st of November. We are going to be in Melbourne for two shows at least this year on the 27th and the 28th of December at the Corner Hotel. And we're going to be in Sydney for at least two shows as well on the 3rd and 4th of January at the Comedy Store. There'll be a link to those tickets on our social medias, also likely in a promotion for this podcast. Also, greatcricketer.club for all of our merchandise and ticket sales. All the stuff will be there. That's the best way you can do it. But we'll be, you guys know how the internet works. There'll be a link to the internet sites where you can buy the tickets to the live shows, and we're going to be performing. We're all going to be there. We should say as well, we're a chance for the other cities, particularly Adelaide and Perth, some stuff revolving around our work with Channel 7 this summer, or as Dave calls them, the other network. Pez, something else?
Yes, wanted to also take a chance as we are wrapping up this kind of mini-season, I suppose, to thank a young man by the name of Jared Biviano. Those who, I guess, subscribe to the show, follow the show on social, will have noticed a large uptick or an improvement in the graphic design around our podcasts. Jared kindly approached us and said that he'd like to be part of helping us improve that, which is, I presume, was a way of saying what you're currently doing is disgusting.
Yeah.
And we were happy enough to, extremely happy and grateful to accept his help. Now, just a little background on Jared. Firstly, he asked that I not mention his name, presumably because he's embarrassed to be associated with us. He is a great graphic designer, and I would like to plug him. If you do want to know what he does and what he's about and all of his work, go to his Instagram. It's @TheFifthCreative. That is also about Jared. I've just got his My Cricket up here as well, and he averages 24.48 across 231 matches. He plays first grade for Sutherland. He has 3 first grade hundreds and put on 300 with Shane Watson last year, so he can play the code as well. And really sorry, Jared, for saying all of that, but he's an exceptionally good graphic designer and left hand opening bat. Hit 10 in a trial match on the weekend as well, by the way. It's always good to go away and get 10, isn't it? Thanks, Jared.
Okay. All right. Let's get into hashtag AskTGC. Thank you. It's really getting to the point where there are getting like there are so many that are coming in. So don't stop that. If I haven't read your question out, we haven't read your question out over the summer. We will get to them one day, but there are dozens and dozens and hundreds of these coming in. So thank you very much for the people who write in. But we've got 4 of the best here this week. Nick Barker is going to kick it off for us this week, and he says, "Hey boys, I'm not sure if this is the right spot to put our questions for hashtag RCGC in, but due to some questions being 1,000 words long, I'm assuming this is the right place." He comes in via email. "Anyways, I'm a batsman who rarely bowls, but if called upon, I've always sent down my rank slow medium paces, with my main focus just being to land the ball on the pitch. Whilst going through the kitchen at night preparing late night meals during ad breaks while watching the Ashes, I've caught myself shadow bowling. As a rare pace bowler myself, I haven't been trying to emulate the amazing sling action of Mitch Johnson or the tall and elegant action of Mitch Stark. I have caught myself emulating the most extravagant spin bowling action with the run-up of Shane Warne, and the action itself a fucking crazy three-way love child between Adil Rashid, Mathai Muralitharan, and Harbhajan the Turbinator Singh. What the fuck is wrong with me? It's just as me trying to find my true self. Cheers, Nick."
He kind of gives himself a rap, doesn't he? Just saying, "I'm just this amalgamation between three incredible spinners." Mm. But, like, maybe it is. This is Pavel writing it under a pseudonym. Yeah. It sounds like there's something trying to escape your body there, Nick. There's something that's there's something that you've been kind of something's taken over your body, taken hold, and I think you've got to roll with it. You've got to forget this slow medium claptrap and start producing some of this fucking crazy three-way love child bowling, as you describe it.
He's mentioned Murali and Harbhajan there. Is he chucking it? Is he shadow bowling no balls? I'd love to know if his elbow's going past the 15 degrees or whatever they use these days to call a noe. Like, if you're chucking it while you're shadow bowling, then that's a confronting realisation. Mm. Best of luck dealing with that.
Okay. Cheers, Nick. Lockie O'Keefe writes in, "Gents, I need help deciding what I should do with my cricketing career. I'm a second grade opening bowler, occasionally appearing in the ones when their openers have better things to do with their Saturdays. I've had 3 good seasons in the twos, including taking 5 for 22 in a losing grand final and being named man of the match. My problem this year is that our long-standing first grade opening bowler has moved clubs, and I have been named in the first grade side for the first trial match of the season, and I'm seriously concerned that I do not have enough social capital to mix it with the ones boys. My social capital run sheet is as follows. no chest, no pipes, but have a good salad and bowling that has been described as sharp by a few opening bats. I have a career batting average of 6.13 with a top score of 20-odd, 17-odd out, but I'm one of those few single lads in the side and have a few decent chops and circuit stories that the older blokes always latch onto. I drive a 1999 Toyota RAV4 with dints in the roof courtesy of Splendor 2016, but have several new tattoos, one of which was acquired on a drunken night out in Surfers Paradise. I'm too scared to sledge due to my altogether lack of rig, have nightmares about the short ball and miss field balls at mid-off for fun. I'm also a music teacher, which generates some interest from the more established members of the side who enjoy reminiscing about old Aussie rock. My university major in jazz, however, is considered fucking yuck and disgustingly rare. I've only showered once with the Ones team and did so in my skins before quickly slipping into a fresh pair of tradie undies my mum bought me. I was fined heavily for this. The question remains, does my salad, chop stories, tattoos and circuiting ability leave me with enough social capital to make it in the highest grade I'll surely never reach, or does my overall rareness and lack of ability leave me forever relegated to being an okay second grader? If this is the case, should I apply to be a second grade captain in order to climb to the top of the alpha tree in the twos, or is it time for me to give away this cunt of a game and enjoy a few Saturdays at the pub on Tinder? Thoughts?
Fucking hell. It's one of those questions that hits every fucking grade cricketer bingo KPI. Chess, pipes, rig, salad, yuck, social capital, alpha. It's all there.
Jazz.
Showers, yep. Mum.
Tradie undies.
So many tradie undies gags in this show. Fuck me. 1999 Toyota RAV4 with dints in the roof courtesy of Splendor 2016. Sorry. I think he's got enough going on, but I don't think you need to. There's always this thing about you feel like you need to prove yourself to people in higher graders because, as we've always said, playing bingo, again, if you play in a higher grade than someone, you're a better person than them. So, but like the reality is, in reality, the people who play lower graders often have a more rounded personality because they haven't committed there. They haven't put all the eggs into the cricket basket, essentially.
Well, it's like a beautiful man or woman. You know, they coast on their beauty and they don't have to worry about, you know, rounding themselves as a person or anything else other than just being beautiful.
Bubble boys.
And that's what a wonderful first grade cricketer is just a beautiful man or woman who doesn't have to worry about anything and therefore their personalities can sometimes lack.
Like you can just touch up around the edges here. Like, just don't shower in your skins. Like, he's even writing that he's self-aware enough to know that's a dumb thing to do, and then just slip into a pair of undies that your mother had bought you. I'm not sure how old you are, Lockie. I mean, you're on Tinder, so you've got to be of age anyway, and you're at the pub, so you should.
His university major is in jazz, okay, so sort of at the
he's early 20s,
back end of his uni.
Yeah.
But also, his mum buys him undies.
Yeah. Well. Sort the shower stuff out, then sort out the home stuff, I reckon.
Yeah, that's trickle easier. Down. Trickle down,
cricketomics. Do you think a university major in jazz kind of flies in 2019 cricket?
Man.
Certainly wouldn't have in 2000.
Nah.
Well, 1999, 2006 inclusive.
No, it really wouldn't have, no.
The Aussie rock stuff is still your banker. The jazz, you might find someone of interest in that, usually an older gentleman who likes to drink, you know, a Pinot Gris. At the end of a day's play, a wine drinker.
Exactly. You might get into a really good conversation with one equally rare unit and this, you know, strength in numbers of rarity that you will both be consigned to the waste bin of grade cricket very quickly. Okay. Joel Tan. This is a lengthy one. Dear Ask TGC, after professing for most of my life that I had no interest in cricket whatsoever, I made the questionable decision of checking out this year's IPL on the recommendation of a friend who's been trying to get me to watch it for years. Before I knew it, I was hooked. I found myself streaming every game I was able to, waking up in the middle of the night while on holiday with my girlfriend to check match scores, and staying up till dawn, glued to a screen watching Chennai lose a nail-biter of a final to Lasith Malinga's phenomenal bowling and a questionable MS Dhoni run-out decision. While this all seemed like a relatively harmless interest at the time, in the intervening months I've gone on to obsessively follow first the World Cup and now the Ashes, and it's becoming a bit of a concern. 6 months ago, the only cricket I'd ever seen was the occasional Big Bash game, but I now found myself at the conclusion of a 5-match test series, having intentionally watched the majority of it, wondering who this stranger I've become is and how I'm supposed to feel about him. At the same time, I'm experiencing a deeper identity crisis brought on by still wanting to support the Indian cricketers who got me into the sport to begin with, while also realising just how fucking good Australia are. Steve Smith's performance during the Ashes has been utterly transcendent, leading me to join the voices hailing him as the best since Bradman, in brackets arguably an even bolder claim on my part, given that Sir Donald was literally the only cricketer I knew by name a few short months ago. Jasprit Bumrah's recent hat-trick and India's overwhelming dominance in all formats of the game during the tour of the West Indies, while nice to see, just didn't hold a candle to the thrill of watching Smudge bat his way to a double ton in his first post-concussion appearance, or the satisfaction of denying the World Cup winning, he puts an asterisk there besides World Cup winning, nation, the chance to claim an Ashes victory as well. Meanwhile, an Instagram post from Virat Kohli showcasing the underwhelming rigs of the Indian team has left me questioning whether I can still get around these blokes, a question which continues to trouble me regardless of how well they actually perform on field. With that said, how concerned should I be about my increasingly compulsive interest in the sport of cricket? How should I resolve the tension I feel regarding team loyalty? And what does all this imply about the level of security I feel in my relationship with my adopted younger brother, who happens to be Indian and has a better rig, salad and circuit to chop conversion rate than I could ever hope to manage? That's from Joel.
That's really good. Really good.
Cool.
I don't know where, yeah. I can't remember where Joel's from. I can't remember which format this came in. I might have been an email, so he might not have been able to find it. But it's a really good question. So
that's great.
I presume he's not Australian. He's not from Australia.
I think he might be. And he's got an adopted younger brother who happens to be Indian. That's the bit that got me in the end. A wonderful twist.
Because he just got into cricket by checking out this year's IPL on the recommendation of a friend. So that's how he just happened to...
the fucking IPL first up? That's like the worst cricket to watch.
I know. But he was hooked.
Is it though? We just don't see it here. The IPL's good, isn't it?
No, I don't know if it is. I can't watch cricket in India. The wickets are shit. It's like it's all blurry and like I don't know.
It's all blurry.
Doesn't feel right. Doesn't feel, I want crisp HD 4K shit on the NBN.
Yeah. Okay.
Such wonderful questions in here, Joel, and it's so well written. This is like Richard Flanagan with a pseudonym as well. I'm a bit intimidated to answer it.
Just on the Indian rigs, though, like they're not that bad, are they? Like Kohli, I mean, I know, I guess it depends how you're looking at rigs, whether you're looking at them through the traditional Western body image prism where men have to be like muscular but also have a really low body fat percentage.
That's interesting.
It depends if he's looking at it, because the Indian team, they're not bad rigs. Like Kohli's got
salads.
An objectively good rig. Oh, salads are unbelievable. Fashion sense, high fashion. Some of them.
He goes, "You're the rig guy." I mean, what's your view on Indian cricket team's rigs?
Like Bumrah is just lean. It's just like it just levers. Bumrah's levers. Bumrah's levers. Mm-hmm. Actually, that reminds me. Girlfriend of mine matched with Jasprit Bumrah on Bumble when they were in Australia over the summer.
Okay.
And I know that because she screenshotted everything and she showed me. I didn't ask for that. So yeah, he was out there. There was also that stuff about Shami was like sliding into someone's Instagram DMs unsolicited. Okay. So like they're the Indian team are up and about.
Alleged? Is that alleged or it's just that?
No, it's a real thing. The Instagram stuff's real. The Instagram stuff's real.
What is this show?
Epstein.
India are up and about. The rigs are fine. The salads are incredible. Jadeja, Kohli, Bumrah's all right. You know, there's enough going on there. There's some great. Yeah, I think they're fine. India's fine.
Fine. Okay, India's fine.
India's fine. They're very Bikram yogurt rigs to me. Increasingly compulsive interest in the sport of cricket. How concerned should Joel be by that? Well, very. You know, you're consigning yourself to a life of much pain, soul-searching, existentialism. But it all, as he goes, very wisely said earlier, it's all very tantric, Joel. And once every 20 years, something good will happen, maybe.
Well, it's in the honeymoon period, maybe. I mean, he's only been in this for less than a year. Let's not forget that. It's been less than a year that he's been watching and appreciating cricket. And he has been exposed to, like, wall-to-wall premium cricket over the past few months. The one most wonderful English summer that was, as all the misty-eyed English journalists will tell you. And now it's fucking time for us all to take a breather. We'll take a few weeks off, reevaluate our priorities in life, and I encourage Joel to do the same.
Maybe we could explain to Joel when cricket can be bad. to watch? I mean, when does it get bad?
Kind of. We tried to do that with Pavel, but he just didn't want a bar of it. Similar thing. I mean, he's only been playing for 8 years.
Watch the highlights of the Big Bash when it was still going on in March last year.
Yeah. Watch any test match at the MCG on Boxing Day.
Watch Boxing Day, you'll change your mind.
Okay, last one, lads. I just want to sneak this one in because it sort of encapsulates the summer that's been. Elliot Anderson, hashtag AskTheDC. Hi, fellas. I'm writing to you about a cricket-related dream I had last night, which I hope you can shed some light on. This isn't your usual can't find your kit or walking out with no gear on. I dreamt I was keeping, which I rarely do, and a former teammate was batting. I've ended up stumping him and giving him a disgraceful send-off. A full-on barrage of fuck you, champ, and better luck next time, dickhead. I've never had a disagreement with said teammate, and we got on very well, so no idea where this outburst has come from in my subconscious. I do like a sledge on the field, but try to keep it lighthearted rather than straight-up abuse. Thoughts? Go well, Elliot.
A lot of people are concerned.
Why is he sledging his friend? Like, he's in his dream, he's like, he's never had an altercation with this person. That's some deep-seated shit, isn't it? That's some deep-seated issues underlying there.
Well, my mother-in-law is a psychologist by trade and actually on the side runs dream groups.
Really?
And so she has been quite strong on dream interpretation for a while, and I respect it. Some of it sounds quite meaningful. Dreams can be great metaphors for things happening in your life, and she kind of encouraged my wife to write down her dreams when she was a child. And so I have dreams where I just have fucking shapes in them and shit, nothing really much is happening. And like, then Tori will wake up and go, oh, I was dreaming that I was, you know, like riding on a dolphin in Sydney Harbour, you know, and went under the harbour bridge and something. Oh, okay. Good on you. But, you know, you can learn more about your dreams by kind of writing them down and kind of ruminating on them, I suppose, a little bit. I'm just saying this as I'm Googling verbal abuse of people in dreams and what it actually means.
Because when you say that you just dream of shapes and stuff, are you talking about like Ian Bell, front arm, good front press, those kind of shapes?
Or dancing.
I remember being in Byron Bay at a hostel and meeting a really lovely bloke during the day, and then it was like an 8-bed hostel room and we all went to sleep. In the middle of the night, this bloke just started racially abusing no one, just like shouting racial abuse at the top of his lungs in an 8-bed hostel dorm. He seemed a lovely bloke.
Okay, so dreaming of abusing a person means you will be unfortunate in your affairs, losing good money through overbearing persistency in business relations with others.
There you go, Elliot. That's the answer to your question. All right, Ian Higgins here signing off with Sam Perry and Dave Edwards. We'll be back in a couple weeks' time for the UK
tour of New Zealand. Big thanks to the fans. Big thanks to the fans who listened
thanks for sticking with us.
What it is. Thank you for listening and all of that. Yeah, and just in listening, enduring, writing, engaging. It's we're grateful.
It's very nice. Ian Higgins here signing off for Sam Perry and Dave Edwards. We'll see you in a couple of weeks' time. We'll be back again. We'll do it all again for one more summer. Cheers.